Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Nadeem Raza is MD of the hugely successful Microlise company, supplying tracking and performance software for lorry fleets all over the world. When he joined the company as a software developer back in the 1980s, he was staff number 25, with all of the staff being based at the company's offices in North Nottinghamshire. In 2008, Nadeem led a management buyout, and today Microlise employs more than 700 people working across six continents. Under Nadeem's leadership, the company has gone through a period of unprecedented growth. In 2021, it floated on the stock exchange and was valued at £156 million. Last year alone, it generated revenues of £71 million. However, Nadeem says that at heart, he is still just an engineer who loves problem solving. So Nadeem Raza, it is our great pleasure to welcome you to this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So that last line I used there, I've heard you talk about it numerous times, your love of problem solving and the fact that you've employed people, you've surrounded yourself with people who are the same. Is that an industry specific thing? Is it just you personally, or is it something wider than that?
Well, we're a software business, okay, and essentially what we're doing is solving problems for our customers. That's essentially what software is there to do. So having a whole group of people, whether they're the actual software engineers or managers within the company or directors, that's what we spend a lot of our time doing, is helping our customers, but also solving all the challenges that we have internally as well. So having that kind of mental mindset that looks at things and says, well, how do I solve that? How do I make it better? And continually asks those questions and is very curious. That's the kind of mindset that we'd like to have in our staff.
Yeah, curiosity. A lot of the leaders I've spoken to on this podcast say curiosity is something they're always looking for. It's a great trait, a great skill to have. You just started talking about Microlise there. As I laid out, it's a very big company. For those who don't know, just explain to us what it actually does.
So we provide software solutions to the transport and logistics industry. That's the main part of what we do. So, for example, in the retail industry, people like Tesco, Sainsbury's, and all the major high street retailers that you know, they have to move goods from manufacturers to their own warehouses, and then from the warehouses to supermarkets, and then obviously from supermarkets to home delivery. And we help them manage not just all the goods and the inventory that they're moving around within their supply chain, but also all the other assets. So that's the people, that's the vehicles, the trucks, the trailers, the cars, vans, etc. And help them do that in the most effective way possible so that they reduce their costs, they reduce their environmental impact, and they meet the extensive and critical quality requirements that customers have. You know, that ability to place an order today and have something delivered tomorrow, or in fact, as a lot of retailers are going to now, having it delivered within a few hours later on today. You know, being able to do that at scale, doing it efficiently and doing it at a low cost without causing lots of environmental impact is really what everyone's trying to do these days.
And you just talked about at scale there. In my intro there, I outlined how your business has grown. And I believe, and I don't know whether this is true or not, you're collecting data from your software from every single country in the world, apart from North Korea.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when you think about how globalization, you know, operates around the world, the fact that goods move all over the world, and people need to track just those goods, as well as obviously the vehicles and so on that move those goods. It literally is all over the world. You know, people deliver goods to Antarctica, and we have vehicles that we monitor in Antarctica moving those goods to you know, those scientific bases and so on.
That's remarkable. Recent contract, I believe you signed, was with a delivery fleet in Australia. Is that groceries as well, or is that something else?
No, that is groceries. So we have a number of retailers that we work with in Australia. One of them is a brand that's obviously disappeared off the UK high street, Woolworths. Some people may be old enough to remember that. But Woolworths is actually a very big brand and a very big organisation in Australia, and happened to be one of our customers now, following a contract win late last year with them. So that's all about helping them deal with their home delivery operation, how they go around delivering goods from supermarket to the home in some new electric vehicles. So really trying to do that in a very sustainable way.
Great stuff. So let's go back to the beginning. You first joined Microlise back in the late 1980s, more than 35 years ago. So tell us how your own leadership story unfolded.
So, Microlise was actually my second job out of university. I joined doing something that I really loved, which was writing software. I've been writing software since I was about 14. So that was when I was in secondary school.
So it became a hobby.
and it was a hobby at that point when I was doing it at school. And obviously for some of your listeners that are probably old enough and remember things like the ZX Spectrum and the Atari computers and the Commodore computers and so on, that's where I started. So it was a great job to do because it was a hobby, so I wasn't really working, as they say. And from there, the company grew, and I obviously took on more management responsibility. So I ran a team of six people, all in the R&D department. That department grew to about a team of 30. And I was looking after not just the software development, but also hardware engineering. We actually designed our own radios at one point, so I was looking after RF design and industrial design as well. And then because of my way of thinking, it's all about problem solving, looking at how do I make something better, improve a particular process, implement some IT system to solve a particular issue. I ended up being seconded into other parts of the business, including manufacturing, sales, marketing, support desk, so project management, etc.
Did I read somewhere that you actually set up the original email system in there?
I did, yeah. I set up the networking in the organization. I set up the first email system, the first internet connectivity that we did, the first sort of storage, network storage systems that we had, some of the early business systems. So, yeah, I did quite a few different things at the time. Just having that kind of mindset helped with implementing those types of systems across the business.
In 2008, you led a management buyout.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that was more, it wasn't something that I necessarily had an ambition to do. But having worked with the then owner for a number of years, he was looking to retire and really wanted somebody else or a group of other people to run the business on a full-time basis on his behalf, and asked us to do that management buyout. And it took us a year or two to organize it and make it happen. But we completed that in 2008.
If I remember rightly, that's a lot of debt to be taking on at a period of economic downturn.
Well, fortunately, it was a very friendly MBO in the sense that it was the way that it was constructed meant that we didn't have lots of debt. However, having said that, 2008 was a very difficult period, and obviously that was just that we completed our MBO just at the beginning of that financial crisis. So we did get into debt problems, that's fair to say, and we had 2 or 3 years of really hard times and quite challenging times. But we managed to get through it, and I think that's where you and the rest of the management team and the staff that you have, you know, really counts for a lot. Because if you can get through the tough times, then you know, the easier times are just a walk in the park.
So the bonds that you forged during those periods, they're the things that you're capitalizing on now, are they?
Well, a lot of the people that were involved with running the business at that time have actually now retired. So we had a couple of people that retired in 2018. So we did a shareholder restructure to enable them to retire. And then my other business partner, who I've worked with for, you know, ever since the beginning in the late 80s, he effectively retired when we did our IPO in 2021.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. I'm interested in how all of this has fed into your leadership. You know, has it made it eat the fact that you did every job to start with, and then you went through a tough period and you came out the other end? Does this make it much easier, or does it mean that you're always feeling the need to put your nose in everything that everyone does?
No, I think that in life you continuously learn. Okay, all of these challenges happen. Sometimes they happen and they're instigated by you. Sometimes they happen to you. But every one of them is a learning experience, and it makes you who you are. You understand that there can be difficult times. You know how to deal with those difficult times and the stress that involves. Equally, you know how you can rely on certain people, because you can trust them that they've got your back and you've got their back as you go through some of those processes. Having worked across large parts of the organization and understanding how different things, different departments and different roles work, also help you with an understanding of how the business is put together. You know, business is made up of all sorts of different areas. They have different people with different ways of working, different characters in them, and being able to understand that helps you organize, manage, motivate, lead all of those different departments, because you understand that the people in finance have a very different mindset to the people in marketing. And so being able to appreciate that those differences in characters helps you manage and lead an organization more effectively.
So this, I mean, I know you talk about, I've seen lots of the stuff you've written and spoken about online. You talk about the Microlise family. There's obviously a big spirit within the company. Is that something that has just emerged over a period of time? Is that something that you just thought, oh, goodness gracious, this works, this feeds into our success? Or was it something that you start, when you, right at the start, you thought, I'm going to try and build this?
No, I think it was instilled in me by some of the previous owners of the company prior to
good mentors.
Yeah, we had good mentors, and they were very much thought about the staff, and very much thought about the, you know, being fair to everybody, being very aware of their needs, and really trying to make sure that the staff are looked after, because it's particularly in our industry, the business is the staff. There's a lot of knowledge, a lot of skills, and a lot of experience within staff that you don't really want to lose. You know, they are part of the fabric of the solution that you sell to customers. Without the knowledge of the people involved, the software is just a tool. You don't really understand how to use it, and it's all the knowledge and experience of the people that can help customers use our tools more effectively. That's what really delivers benefits to those customers, not the tool itself.
And you're just talking there about the importance of trying to keep staff and to grow staff within your business. How is that becoming increasingly difficult?
I don't think it's becoming increasingly difficult. I think it's about how you treat people. You know, if you treat people well and you look after them through their tough times, you know, people can go through lots of issues that are nothing to do with work. They can have lots of personal issues outside of work as well, and you have to be conscious of that. But if you look after those people and give them opportunities, and there is enough opportunities there for them to have a career and see that they're growing, then naturally they will stick around. Equally, you know, we've got some people who have been more ambitious and wanted to grow faster and quicker than we could give them opportunities, and they've gone away and gone somewhere else and done some more works for another organization, and a few years later they may come back, and we've seen lots of examples of that occurring as well, where, you know, people have gone off to work somewhere else because they had opportunities that we weren't able to give them, but a few years later, you know, they've grown and they've developed, and there was something else that we could offer them, and they've come back. So, you know, it's just being very conscious of how people want to operate and how people want to develop as well.
Well, you've talked about the importance of looking after people there. But as a leader, I go through everything that you've done. It strikes me that you've taken a lot of personal pressure. There's the MBO, which you've just talking about, You mentioned the fact that you floated in 2021. You've got lots of big ideas for future growth. A lot of your own money is tied up in the business. How do you deal with that pressure while at the same time maintaining this, if you don't mind me saying, affable, broad-minded leadership style?
Well, I've always had this view that, you're only a leader if people want to follow you, yeah. But secondly, it's about looking after staff, community, customers, and obviously shareholders as well. But it's about.
So wait a minute, that's a very diverse group, isn't it?
It is a diverse group, but they're all stakeholders in what you're doing. But fundamentally, I'm always about thinking about how you can create value and create benefits to people. And so I'm very much always focused on doing that rather than thinking about, well, what's in it for me? Because I think that kind of happens as a consequence of doing all the other things. If you create value elsewhere, then ultimately you'll benefit yourself. But the key thing is to look at where you can add value, where you can help your staff, where you can help customers, and benefits to yourself will ultimately arrive as a consequence of that.
Do you love being in charge?
It has its good days and it has its bad days. I think there are some aspects of it that, it's great to be able to define your own destiny and, I guess, to decide how you want to do things. But it is a bit of a fallacy because you've got 750 people that are going off making decisions and doing things that you have no idea about. So to assume that you are actually in charge is...
I probably phrased that a bit incorrectly. I should have said, do you get a thrill from your leadership?
I get a thrill out of the success that we achieve as an organization. Yeah. So the fact that we've helped customers save a lot of money, the fact that we've helped people reduce their carbon footprint, reduce the amount of fuel they're using, made things more efficient, helped them improve the quality of service that they're delivering to their customers. All of those things, you go, yeah, okay, great, we've made a difference. And I think that's the key thing, is being able to make a difference.
But does this not all come back to the fact that when you were 14, 15, you were loving what you were doing when nobody was paying you for it? This problem-solving engineer who enjoys with the ZX Spectrum, and now you're just doing a natural progression of that.
In some ways, yeah. It's about, I've always been one of those people that likes to understand how something works. I like to make things better. I'm very, very curious. If you looked at my browser history, you'd kind of go, why is this the same person? You think I was a schizophrenic in terms of some of the subjects that I get interested in. But that's part of, that's part of who I am. It's part of my makeup in terms of being very curious and being wanting to understand something and trying to look for better ways of doing something.
Okay, so one of the reasons I was asking that was I was saying, are all the best leaders, perhaps the most successful leaders, the ones who are doing something that they really love?
I think that helps. Absolutely. You know, there's no point going off and doing a job that you don't like or that doesn't make you want to get up in the morning and go and do it. So I think it has to be part of the process that you have to enjoy what you're doing. Not all the time, but certainly if you don't enjoy it the majority of the time, you're in the wrong job.
So we've moved into talking more specifically about the data that you're collecting. I know you said you're collecting data from every country in the world apart from North Korea. And you've also said that the future growth of your own company, Microlise, could be built around the vast quantities of data in its own software collections. Explain how that might work.
So we collect huge amounts of information, particularly about how vehicles are moving around on the roads, different times of day, different days of the week, etc. So one of the things that we see happening is that, particularly in the sort of inventory and supply chain world, is more collaboration. If you think about a truck, it might surprise people to realize that over 25% of the time, trucks actually run with nothing on board. So they're carrying air.
And that's because they've delivered.
That's because they've delivered something and they're on the way back to base, etc. So, but that's in any other industry, if you said 25% of the time was waste, effectively, that would be an enormous figure to deal with. So certainly, by having more collaboration across different companies, the aim is to try and reduce that level of waste. Because while they're traveling back from their last delivery, they could pick up something else and take it to some other point and destination so that we can really reduce that volume of empty running. And
that's, but do you not already capitalize on that to maximum capability, as it were? Is there still more road in that, is there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's still lots to go at because, again, getting people to collaborate is competitors, in a lot of cases, getting competitors to collaborate is a challenge. And also having all the data and systems and working out the commercials around that in terms of who pays and who makes money from any particular movement, those are still challenges that the industry is grappling with.
So this is a long way from software. You're involved in relationship building here, bringing together great powers to collaborate and take something forward. As I say, that's a long way from technology, isn't it?
Um, it, It is, but it's business. You know, it's about working out how do you make some of the, because often technically you might be able to solve it, right? But that doesn't mean that it's something that people will buy, because you have to get all the other things right. You have to work out exactly how are people going to derive value from it. I'll give you, for example, there was lots and lots of work has been done on trucks effectively driving very close to each other, behind each other, because if you have a truck, or if you have a series of trucks, like five or six trucks, actually driving within a couple of meters behind each other, the aerodynamics of that can result in
peloton type thing.
Yeah, exactly. It can give you sort of a 4-5% fuel saving, which, you know, in a truck that goes 9 miles to the gallon, that's a lot of saving. And there are the systems for that exist today. You can do that technically. It's not a problem. You can drive trucks, you know, in that kind of way, very close to each other without having an accident, etc. But the problem is that the truck that's at the front, actually, their fuel economy gets worse by a few percent, but all the other trucks behind it get better, right? Because the truck at the front is the one that's dealing with all the aerodynamic issues. So commercially, how do you deal with who should pay for that and who benefits from that if all of those trucks are from four or five different companies? Yeah. So the technology for that exists today, but it hasn't been implemented because no one's been able to work out how do you commercialize that. You know, how do you come up with a model that says this is who pays for it and this is who saves money?
And is that something that you're involved with at the moment?
Well, we have been involved with that type of operation. But as I said, the challenge is it's never been able to get off the ground because there isn't a commercial model that everybody would agree with.
So that's all to do with diplomacy and negotiation.
It is, and having the will to do it. You know, we've seen a number of people do it with their own trucks, but obviously that's a very small part of what you can do on the road in comparison to doing it with all the trucks that are out there. So there are benefits still to be had in the supply chain and that world, but it's not just a matter of getting the technology to work.
Fascinating stuff. So looking back over your leadership, I know you probably see several years in the future of your leadership, but just looking back over the last three decades or so, what's the decision that's made you most proud?
Oh, that's a difficult one. There's been so many things that we've got right, and there's been so many things that we've got wrong
we'll
as
come
well.
To those.
In a minute. I think that one of the things that's probably in hindsight done the, you know, has achieved the greatest benefit for the business is switching our business model from being the sort of more traditional license and annual maintenance type business model that we had in software 10, 15, 20 years ago, to being a, you know, pay per asset per month, being a true software as a service business. We made that decision and that change in our business model in the sort of early 2010s, and now everyone's doing it. You know, if you're using Microsoft Office, you know that you do it on a pay per month basis. It didn't used to be like that. You had to buy a license and pay an annual fee and upgrade it and so on. Whereas obviously today, you don't worry about the upgrades, you just pay a monthly fee.
And that was a bit of foresight from someone.
Well, I don't think we can claim the credit for that. It was actually done by a couple of other companies in our industry, and we thought that was a great idea, so we followed suit. But it was something that we got into fairly early on. Yeah, and obviously nowadays everyone's operating that because it gives you a more standard financial footing to operate and more stable environment to run the business on. So that was probably one of the best decisions that we made 14, 15 years ago.
Good stuff. And on the other side of the equation, what do you look at and think in leadership terms? Lord almighty, I really could have done that better.
Well, probably the MBO, not in terms of doing the MBO, but in terms of timing. Obviously,
okay, yes.
Timing-wise, doing it at the beginning of a credit crunch and a financial crisis was probably not the best timing. But if we hadn't done it, we wouldn't be here today. So
youthful exuberance. Is that right? You wouldn't do it now.
Well, I would still do an MBO, and I would, you know, anybody who wants to run their own business, I think it's a great thing to do. It has an awful lot of challenges, but it's a great thing to do. And I would do an MBO at the drop of a hat. No doubts in my mind. But timing is key.
Okay. So that leads very nicely to my final question. So as you know, this is a pod for the Nottingham Business School. Again, looking back over those 3 decades plus of leadership, what single piece of advice might you offer to students, academics, leaders, executives, would-be leaders who have an association with the business school here?
I think just some advice to leaders in general is everyone's an individual. So think about what makes people tick and being able to be flexible in how you deal with people, because no two people are the same and everyone has their own motivations, have their own agenda, has their own worries, has their own things that are occupying their mind at any particular point in time. So being very conscious of that, being very patient, tolerant, and considerate of people that you lead is really, really important.
That's fantastic advice. Nadeem Raza, MD of Margulies, thank you very, very much for sharing your leadership stories with us on the NBS Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mike.
If you enjoyed this NBS Business Leaders Podcast with Nadeem Raza, why not listen to previous episodes with the CEO of International Bank Capital One UK, Lucy Hague's MBE, the Vice Chancellor of Nottingham Trent University, Professor Edward Peck, CBE, or the Chef de Mission of Paralympics GB, Penny Briscoe, OBE. This episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast was produced and edited by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.